friends, and welcome to another episode of Pod Friends. That's how it works here. My name is Matt Scott, and I'm the host of Pod Friends, and I'm just so grateful for you, so glad that you're tuning in. And I don't want to take a ton of time before diving into this week's episode featuring this week's guest, Sasha Joseph. And so I'll tell you more about Sasha. I'll tell you more about what to expect. But first of all, how are you doing? How's it going? How's life? I know you might just be coming from another podcast. Feel free to take your shoes off, take your jacket off, settle in, get comfy, grab a cup of water. We're here. We're in together. And I'm excited for you to dive in and join this conversation that I had with Sasha about her life and so much more. But as we dive in, I want to invite everyone, myself included, to ask themselves a simple question, which is, well, maybe not so simple, but how can you live life to the fullest? And how can you live life full size rather than being in somebody's box? You probably know what that's like. Like, I know what that's like sometimes when people, family members, friends, coworkers, anyone might have an idea of who you are and who you should be and how you should show up. But the reality is none of us are as simple as the stereotypes and the things that people think that we should be. Your story, my story, our stories are ours to tell. And this week's guest, Sasha Joseph, is such a powerful example of that. Today, I'm so excited to talk with Sasha in the second to last episode of season one of Pod Friends. And, you know, if you know Sasha, you know her from Rob is a Podcast. You know her from Post Show Recaps. You know her from Silent Podcasts, where she's covered 90 Day Fiancé, Never Have I Ever, Bridgerton, Love and Hip Hop Atlanta, Below Deck, Big Brother, Survivor, all of the shows. She's covered all of it. And Sasha is not afraid to dive into the mess that we might not be brave enough to dive into, frankly. And I really love and admire the way that Sasha kind of shows up and is not afraid to speak up and is not afraid to take up space and live life full size. And that has definitely been something that I've been able to learn from, but also that I know other podcasters and other listeners have been able to learn from. And so I'm so excited for you to dive in and learn more about her journey. In today's interview, in this conversation, I spoke with Sasha about her journey from growing up in Mumbai, India, to moving to the US and living in Oklahoma and Texas. And in a lot of ways, even shattering my stereotypes of what that would be like for someone who moves at a young age from India, really the day before starting high school, I believe, from India to the US to start school in Oklahoma. And Sasha's story is such a powerful one. And I love like the joy that's part of it. I love the strength that's part of it. I love all of the ways that she just manages to shine and be a star. And so you'll hear about that journey. You'll hear about her identity as a Jewish woman of color and her work launching a cohort of badass Black women and other women of color, finding belonging despite differences, which is something that she's encountered, and also just not being in systems that don't serve you and really finding a place where not only you belong, but also where you're nurtured and where you can thrive. There is so much to Sasha's story and so many different pieces. And I am just thankful that I had the chance to join in and dive in with Sasha to learn about her life and just her as this unstoppable force that we all know and love. But before diving into the mess, like Marie Kondo, like Sasha often does too, first of all, if you're hearing the sound of my voice, please, 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 I'll say it one more time. I'll probably say it again at the start of next week's episode, but like leave a review for the podcast and leave 5 stars. I'm so thankful and glad and appreciate everyone who has left reviews. You all listened to me last week. You left some reviews. Maybe I'll read some of those next week, but I'm just so thankful that that I could be here and to hear the feedback from you all, that this is also meaningful for you and this is time well spent, is so great. And so please leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And you could find the Podcast Friends podcast feed by going to robhizawebsite.com/podfriendsfeed, where you're able to find the podcast, you're able to subscribe, you're able to leave those 5 stars, leave a review. And please, it really does go a long way to showing people that this is something that we value, and also goes a long way to making sure that Pod Friends could be a thing that we have in the years to come. Don't be stingy with those 5 stars. And on top of all of that, I just want to encourage folks to follow Pod Friends at Hey Pod Friends. Follow me at Matt Scott GW. Email Pod Friends, podfriends@robhizawebsite.com. Suggest guests for Pod Friends for future Pod Friends. Fingers crossed, future Pod Friends at bit.ly/podfriendsnom. That link will be in the show notes, just like a number of the other links that I mentioned. And also, I want to mention something special. So today, you're hearing the conversation with Sasha, but actually right now, if you're hearing this when it comes out, you still have a chance, if you are a Rob Has a Podcast patron, to submit questions for my season finale interview, which will be with none other than Wendell Holland, winner of Survivor Ghost Island, and also a community member, someone we know especially well from recent times on the Purple Pants podcast, Bryson Wen Presents, the events, the Survivor watch parties that he's been hosting for the community. There's so much that Wendell has to share. And if you are an RHP patron, go to the patron Facebook group. That's Rob Has Awesome Patrons. That's Rob Has Awesome Patrons. Easy for me to say. And, you know, respond to my post, letting me know what questions you have for Wendell. And that's one reason to be a patron, one level of encouragement. But also, when you become an RHP patron, which if you're listening to this on March 1st, perfect time to become a patron at the start of the month. There are all sorts of games. There are patron benefits. There are lots of community events bringing people together. There's a patron Discord. RHP makes it really easy to watch shows like Big Brother Canada, including Big Brother Canada 10, which is coming up, Australian Survivor. That's really all I want to promote at the start of the show. But without further ado, let me introduce today's guest. Making her way to the podcast, hailing from Oakland, California, by way of Texas, Oklahoma, and Mumbai, India. You've heard her on Silent Podcast, Post Show Recaps, and on Rob Has a Podcast. Boomer Sooner and Clear the Way for the Bay Area baddie who breaks down the mess and says what we all wish we would. You know her from such places as the Love and Hip Hop, Atlanta Wrap Up, the New Bridgerton Podcast on Post Show Recaps, and both Never Have I Ever and The Amazing Race over on Silent Podcast. She's booked, busy, and brave, and we love her for it. Oh, you. Oh, yeah. Please welcome Sasha Joseph. How's your day been?
My day's been good. I'm grateful to be working remote, so I can really like create my own schedule and really like find liberation in doing my work, because my boss always says this, like, we do stuff from a place of liberation, not, you know, in like a capitalistic white supremacy habit. So what does it mean, you know, to not feel so pressured all the time and do like work out of love? So, you know, it's been a great day. This is a new job. That's why I think I'm so excited for it. But we're recording at 3 p.m. Pacific time. That's why like work is on the mind right now.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on your new job.
Thank you.
But one thing I want to ask about, because I know that we'll get into that. We'll get more into your life and all this. Sasha, everyone knows your brand is mess. I mean, that's what it is.
It's true. It really is.
But you also have a very clean setup. If people aren't watching on YouTube, they should be watching, because Sasha has a nice clean setup, the nice Amazing Race memorabilia, some other pictures and things. But like, I'm wondering, are you as messy on outside the podcast as you are on the podcast? This is one thing that people want to know. This is why the people are tuning in. Maybe over the course of this hour together or so, we'll answer it. But like, are you truly mess?
Yes, 100%. Like, as in, what you see in a shot is like this, like, curated, right? Like Instagram versus reality moment where it's like, oh, look at all this, like, you know, my wedding pictures are in the back, whatever. But around me are like boxes I still haven't unpacked, like a bunch of books. I lived in this house, I think, for a year and a half now. And I still have books, like college textbooks that I need to unpack out of boxes. So I'm messy in life when it comes to like physical and for sure, because I love knowing about people's life. Like, I'm not one to, you know, be like, hey, Matt, I heard this about, you know, blank person. Like, yeah. I don't like to be messy like that, but I'm Gretchen Wieners where I need to know, like, your life. Like, I have to know everything about you.
I see it.
I'm pretty shameless with that. Yeah. Like, Chappelle and I did Never Have I Ever together, and he'll tell you, like, I have no shame. Like, I'll be like, so what's up? What are you doing with your life? And, you know, it's just like, I'll just ask. And he's like, okay, like we just wrapped an hour long podcast. And I was like, but tell me about your life. So that's the kind of like mess I like to do. But yeah, college me was more messy than 30-year-old me. But, you know, we evolve and we mature. Thank God.
Do you have like a least favorite chore just while we're talking about mess?
Chores are not fun. No, I think cleaning bathrooms are my least favorite thing to do. Yeah. Ratchet. I hate it.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. What mess. I have to move on. This is...
I know. Like, just the thought
of it, I'm like, you probably could have said any chore and I would have been like, ugh, that's disgusting.
Exactly. I am grateful that I can afford to have very hardworking women come and clean my house once a month. Thank God. Because listen, when you're living with a partner, I feel like all the time, it's like constant. I don't know if anyone out there is living with someone, let me know. But like, how do you make it? You know, because we've been together 6 years and I get on his nerves. He definitely gets on my nerves, and cleaning is the root cause of it all. So when you can outsource and we're privileged enough to be outsourced, thank God that we can do this.
Look at that. Look at that. That's some inspiring life advice too.
Exactly. And
like relationship advice to start people off. I don't think people were ready for us to go like that deep already into the advice, but I guess that's what happens when you bring up mess. It just goes deep.
Exactly.
And you know, this is part of what we're trying to do. I'm going deep with you, Sasha, talking with you about life, about your world. And I will say as background, like, before I even knew that Pod Friends was actually going to be a thing, I already knew that I wanted to interview you specifically because you were on the Wrestling Rehab Up. And, you know, you've obviously, like, we're both part of the class of 2020. So, like, you've been around, we've been around places. But when I was getting ready for the Wrestling Rehab Up, the day that I was having, that we were having you on, me and Mari, I remember, you know, I was like, okay, what am I going to say about Sasha in her intro? And I was like Googling you and looking you up. And I learned so much about you beyond the podcast where I was like, oh my gosh, this is probably not going to come up in the intro, but it could come up in Pod Friends eventually if that's ever a podcast.
Oh my God, and what did you find?
Now I'm going to...
Thankfully, I have no mugshots.
Yeah, do I have the paper? I have the receipts, all the receipts. thankfully it's nothing sketchy.
I'm not that. Listen, I'm messed, but it's like my friends like to call me a sophisticated ratchet. So, you know.
Oh, wait, let's just start there. Like, what's like the, beyond like the mess part of it, you know, the ratchet piece of this and everything else, like, why, what is it about you that's so, a lot of people, obviously, Sasha, just look at you and they're like, you're just so fun size. And, you know, they're like, she's just so sweet. And those are the people who've like never met, never listened to the podcast or anything like that. They're like, oh my God, so demure. What other words could I think of? Those are some good words.
Hufflepuff. Mary, when she did her RHAP takeover, I think like she put me in Gryffindor. So I messaged her saying like, oh my God, I feel like I'm a Slytherin. Like that's the vibe. I give off. And she said, well, it was between Gryffindor or Hufflepuff. And I was like, well, Hufflepuff.
Oh, ooh,
not me.
You're just dragging yourself. This is like, I like
Slytherins are the best. What do you mean?
Damn. But please. Okay. But like, What? Oh, I have so many questions. I think we just need anyway, to go back. I think we just need to go like way back, because one of the things I think is just so fascinating, and you are probably like the first and only person to say, oh, I'm not interesting. Like, I don't have anything to share. But like, you have had probably one of the most interesting dynamic backgrounds when it comes to RHAP. And like, one of the things that I remember even just seeing out there in the world with you is, maybe it's like a tweet where someone's like, meet Sasha, who is like something to the fact of like a Jewish woman from India who like also does this, who also does that, who's like all these things. And I'm like, yeah, she needs to come on Pod Friends because
I have ratings, no idea what tweet you're even talking
all ratings. I have no clue. But, you know, like, what is your like, what's kind of like your life story? In other words, yeah, like going way back, like to your childhood, and all of that, like what, yeah, just like talk to me, because there's not even a question, because I have so many questions. I'm a mess.
I know. I have you. My a thing ready. I feel like I always have it, but I was born in India, in Mumbai actually, which is the largest city I believe in India, so you know, your girl's used to big cities. So I lived there till I was 14, with my parents, but then my parents got divorced. My dad actually ended up moving and still lives in New York. So it was just my mom and I, but also, we have a huge, huge family on both sides, like on my mom and my dad's side. So, it was always people around. So that was kind of like my life in India. I was listening to Mari as well. And yeah, I also ran track and did lots of sports in India, where so that was like my life, where I was kind of like the bully, but not like, I never bullied girls. Like, I only bullied boys. Ooh. So, you know, she was a feminist growing up.
Yes.
And I would only bully the popular kids. Like,
you were one of the popular kids.
I don't know. I don't know that I was popular, but yeah, I don't think like I always had friends. I'm an only child. Hmm. So I had no choice but to make friends. It's like you're going home to nobody. So you need to make some friends. Like, no one your age. Yeah. So I didn't have a choice but to make friends. So that's like kind of my vibe. Like, I was always a competitive person. Like, because I'm that kind of the only child, I like, you know, spotlight. I like being the center of attention. Like, these are things I very much know about myself. So I, you know, I was always part of like things like that, even in school. I was lucky enough to go to a really probably top 10 private school. So where, you know, I was learning languages, where arts was just as important as like STEM, which, especially when you think of stereotypical India, right? Like, those aren't things that you think about. But I used to run track, and I used to, you know, be in plays. Like, I was My Fair Lady. At a play. So just here we are. So, you know, I like, those are kind of things I've always liked to do. And then when I was in ninth grade, my mom finally decided it was time to move to these here United States. So,
one of the things that I found out, and I'm like very curious about this, is that you moved, apparently did you move like a day before your freshman year in high school?
Literally the night, like I landed in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma from Mumbai, India, like at 9. And then, you know, you have to go to school the next morning. Like, I remember being so scared. Again, because I feel like I watched a lot of TV, and we visited America, I think, every 2 years. So it wasn't like this place I'd never been to. Like, I have been to Oklahoma many times before. Wow. So I was just like, yeah, like, I know where I'm going, but it's still weird to go to high school. 'Cause, you know, you think of all the movies. So I remember, and this is like, what a vain thing, but I was like, what all should I, like, shave, you know, like do it. 'Cause in India, like, that's not a thing. Like, you don't.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like, your legs, like, you just, none of my friends, I don't believe, shaved. And, you know, we were 15-year-old, like, Indian girls. Like, we got hair. So I remember that that was, like, my first question to my cousins. I was like, so, like, do people... And then she was like, yeah, you should probably shave your hands and in addition to your legs. And I was like, oh, my God. So I remember spending, like, an hour...
And that was also at like a time too, because we're like, I turned 30 this year. Like we're around basically the same age.
Welcome.
And like, that was also at a time with media where like everyone was so big on like laser hair removal and like women shouldn't have any hair of any sort.
And the pencil eyebrows, like that was the thing. Horrible. Thankfully, I never fell for that. But I remember, my cousin like plucking my eyebrows. And then my mom was like, what's wrong with you? Like. Because my mom's a cosmetologist, so she's like, I will just do that. Like, why aren't you letting me do it? And I was like, no, I need to be like an American teen. So I remember like silly things like that, like is what I was most stressed about because I knew that I would do well in school just because I was like, it's America. Like, I knew I was smarter.
you knew our schools were trash.
Yeah, they tried to put me in like, you know, like, AS like English as a second language class and I was like no like what what is wrong with you
wait I'm so curious even just about that part because like they so it, like when you were growing up in India you like because this is part of my question about the transition that you had like there's obvious well what I would imagine is like okay, there are adjustments when it comes to culture. And like we talked about hair a little bit, but like even with language and not even like literally the English language, but just how people speak because there's all the slang and like just the way that people speak. And you were in freaking Oklahoma? Like what? You're, first of all, let me just put this out there that like I've never been to Oklahoma. A lot of people haven't been to Oklahoma. So the fact that you'd been there multiple times before is jarring to hear.
Yeah. But my like, my aunt lived there, my mom's sister. So that's the reason why we moved. Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense. Mm-hmm. But like what was that transition actually like for you and how did people it sounds like the school, how did they perceive you when you made that shift? Because again, you got there within 12 hours of starting school, which is wild to think about.
I know it really like when I say this story, but I really don't remember being scared. Like I was just kind of excited because in India, 9th and 10th grade. So you graduate high school in 10th grade, then you go to like it's called junior college basically for 11th and 12th. So I remember being like, yo, I just, you know, escaped boards, which are like very hard in India. Like you're, you know, like working year round to like get through, a lot of kids like go through ridiculous amounts of pressure and, you know, just awful, awful things. So I remember being like, thank God I don't have to do that. You know, we made it. And that was, I think, my mom's like ace in the hole, like if because I was not really wanting to go. And she's like, well, you won't have to work as hard. So I was like, cool, we moving. We're going. So, yeah. So I don't know. I don't remember. I remember being excited. The worst part. And, you know, if any educators are out there is lunch. I mean, like the idea of lunch in lunch tables in American school systems are horrible because if you're, you know, if you don't know anyone, you're screwed. Like, where am I going to sit? So I remember being like, great. So we're going to go to the library. You know, that's where we're going to hang out for the first day. And then we'll figure it out from there because we're going to get to track practice that night and I'll probably make friends there. But I was just lucky enough that because this counselor ended up testing me for everything and I was in all pre-AP classes instead of freaking trying to hold me back a grade. So I ended up making friends pretty quickly and I had like, you know, social strategy, right? So I was like, we need to find lunch friends. Like that is the goal of today. So, and I ended
like
up
mean
finding
girls.
Yeah.
Well, like Mean Girls, like the lunchroom scene. Yeah.
Exactly. Wow. And I'm wearing pink. Look at this. but yeah, so I remember like those were kind of like what I was, you know, thinking about. And I made friends so quickly. Like it was the, I met the kindest people there, that I'm, you know, still friends with a few of them. I had like a huge friend group. We all ran track together. So we ended up having this, huge friend group all 4 years of high school. And I obviously had an accent, like a thick accent. And I remember they would make me like read signs, just so, you know, like, cause they were like, this is so funny,
yeah.
To hear. Cause I would say secretary, not secretary, you know, and all these things. And, I was like pretty quick to, join clubs. Like I was in there. I was like, great. How do we do this? Let's move. Let's make friends. So when I was in Oklahoma, it was fine, but I actually moved to Texas for a year and a half. And my mom ended up meeting my stepdad. So that was harder. People in San Antonio, not all people, but yeah, the school was pretty hard. I didn't really have that many friends. I was part of a Jewish youth group, so I had friends there, but they never went to my high school. So I just kept in touch with everyone in Oklahoma, and I was lucky enough that for senior year, we ended up coming back to Oklahoma. But I just, I felt so grateful that it felt easy to be in school there. Like, I didn't have any, like, bullying or, you know, any of, like, people making me feel othered for though at least those things. But like at home, it was weird because I was living with four other teenagers because it was my aunt, and my cousins. So, you know, imagine four teenagers, five teenagers, four girls, one guy.
Yeah.
The phone, you know, like back in the day, right? When you couldn't use the phone and the internet at the same time. So it's like a girl's trying to open up MySpace, but someone else is trying to, you know, be like on the phone with their friend. So I remember those things being much harder. And my life was easier in India. Like my mom had her own business and stuff like that. So, but my mom worked at Subway, and didn't drive, in America. So our life was much harder, although I don't know that my mom ever made me feel that. But, you know, now looking back, I was like, oh, yeah, we like stayed in that, like not an attic, but, you know, like a den on a blow up mattress for like 2 years until, you know, we were grateful enough that my mom met my stepdad and our life like significantly upgraded just overall. But so looking back, it was harder, but in that moment, I never felt like, oh, my life sucks, you know? But yeah, we weren't as well to do, just my mom and I, right? Like, she's working at Subway for 2 years while, you know, I'm trying to figure out high school. Then I went to college, basic. And then, I moved to San Francisco, another country, obviously. Yes, for work. And I've been a Jewish a professional for the past 7 years.
There's so much there.
Sorry,
too.
I like ranted.
No. It's beautiful because like that's what this is though. That's what it is. And I think especially when like especially in the context of podcasts. The thing that was not most difficult for me early on, but just something that was a little jarring is, you know, as members of for me, at least, as members of class of 2020, when we were introducing ourselves at first, you know, some like Rob would graciously hand it over and say, like, Sasha, tell the people about you. And then you would probably like you wouldn't say any of what you just said. It would basically be like, hi, everybody. I'm Sasha. I've been listening to RHAP for X number of years. And I love if you're on the Big Brother podcast, I love Big Brother. I've been watching a long time and then that's it. And so we miss out on like so many of these details that I almost feel like with everyone I've interviewed, they're like, oh my gosh, I'm just so glad that someone's asking me these questions about my life. But I'm like, I want to even go back more in your life because, well, one thing I'm curious about, you mentioned your mom had a business in India. What was her business?
She was a cosmetologist. She started it actually the year before I was, or the year I was born. She'd had it for 15 years before we moved. Actually, she still has it in India. It's still going. She just has someone manage it for her. It's like, that's why, again, I've seen, you know, just a strong woman in my life, which probably shaped me to be so strong, where I was like, yeah, I don't think I need anyone. Like, it's just been my mom and I for so long that it never, you know, anything else like didn't really matter. And that's why I think that that's where maybe that resilience comes from.
Yeah. And the other piece of all of this that I think is so interesting is that you were just like, you're the player who enters the Big Brother house on day one. You're the Tiffany. It sounds like sounded like when you were navigating everything. And one thing I don't even know how to transition into it, but like, you were on reality TV growing up. How do people not know that? We cover reality shows, Sasha. This is like the most important information.
Yeah, I think I shared that in my interview.
I hope so, yes. Rather than like sweeping it under the rug.
Because Rob was like, can you share like your connection to reality TV? I was like, well, I was on it. But one was like a dance show. So in India, like Bollywood dancing, right? I tried to do classical dance, and the lady like told my mom, this is not it. Like, she is not centered. Like, there's too much energy, basically, is what that auntie said. It's fine, lady, whatever. Screw you.
I feel hurt by that.
Yeah, my mom is like classically trained. So that's why my mom was like, oh, it's important. You know, like, Sasha, you should do it. It helps like with discipline and, you know, all this stuff. And I was like, sports. So I ended up, being part of a few dance troupes in India. So when I was doing that, we were on one like dance reality show called Boogie Woogie is what it was called. I still remember it was the Christmas special, and I was like, but I'm Jewish. And everyone was like, what's Jewish? Imagine in India trying to explain to people.
Oh my
like,
gosh.
I'm not Christian. They're like, but, you know, if you're not Hindu, Muslim, or, you know, any of the 18 other, like, you must be Christian.
Oh my gosh. So you were on, that was one reality show you were on.
Yeah. So it was like a dance show. I think I was on it twice. I honestly can't even remember. I think twice with two different dance troops.
Look at that flex right there. I think I was on it, but like also I've kind of like glowed up a lot since then. So I don't even
100%,
remember.
100%. I mean, I'm not a better dancer. I'm definitely was a better dancer then, but still.
Yeah.
And I was on a show called MTV Select. So I was on MTV, I think in the sixth grade. I believe we skipped school. I like was calling my mom actually right before this podcast. And so I was like, wild. Yo, how did this happen? Like, how did you let me go? Because my mom wasn't part of it. I just remember that it was you're living in Mumbai. That's like living in LA, right? Like Bollywood is all around. So I just remember some girl was like, hey, my mom has this connection. They want some like kids on the show. Do you want to come? Like, that's all I remember. This was in the sixth grade. So I don't know like all the details, but somehow we showed up, and I still remember we auditioned, me and this girl that was actually my rival in sports, but we had to be best friends because it was the best friend special. And we did it. Day one, we got to like the main show. And then the next day, I remember telling my mom, my mom and I cannot remember how like I ended up there the first day. But the second day, I remember like getting permission, doing all of that. And we were like on the show with the guy, it was called MTV Select, and I think we won that episode. Like,
wait,
it was like
what
friendship stay like special, and you had to do like a bunch of tasks to like win.
Like Among Us, but real life, where did you have to like get rid of your rival, or like what was
you and your friend had to work together against another friend pair.
Yeah.
And like it was like, you know, silly like MTV games in like the 90s, right? Or 2000s, where it was like on a set and you probably had to like I don't even know what we had to do, but I just remember meeting the host who was famous, and I was like, this is so cool.
Do you think that there's like footage of this that exists?
I wish
somewhere?
I could find it. I've tried so hard to look for it. Unfortunately, in the move, my mom is very passionate about taking pictures. But all of our albums got ruined with flood damage. So it might have been somewhere in there, but she's gone. Who knows? So I did ask the girl that I was with. I actually messaged her on Instagram being like, do you remember how the hell did we get on this show? But we
did
We could not remember.
Are you okay? Good. You're not like I thought that was gonna end, and she never messaged back because she hates me more than ever.
No, we're like still friends. When I go to India, we'd still meet up. I have a few friends still in Mumbai that I talk to.
Yeah. Wait, that's so amazing to all hear about. There's like so much already, and I'm just glad that I could like skip around to all these different things.
Totally.
Because something else that you just mentioned. I love that you were on not only MTV Select, but also Boogie Woogie is the other name of the show. Like, that's such a great name for a reality, dancing reality show.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so sad that that didn't become like the next American Idol, like globally and all of that. But
yeah, it was huge in India. Like, it was like you would like sit on whatever day it came out to watch that, like all the dance troupes.
I bet there are some people who are listening and watching who recognize you from that. Like now that you mentioned it, they were like,
"I was like,
your fans are passionate and they're probably here now." but I'm just saying, if like somehow someone saw this, I wouldn't even be surprised just because like,
I mean, I'm sure they know what Boogie Woogie is. Like that's for sure. And if anyone knows MTV Select with Nikhil Chinnappa, let me know.
There we go. But you mentioned something, which was that with Boogie Woogie, you did the Christmas special and you were like, oh my gosh, I'm Jewish. And people were like, what are you talking about? What does that even mean? So something that I'm so curious about with your background, because like, I know that for a lot of people, especially in the US, especially because like, I not only grew up like with like a lot of Jewish people around, but also went to college like with a lot of Jewish people too. Like the idea of an Indian Jew is like so, oh my God, no pun intended, but like so foreign to people.
Yeah.
And I didn't even realize that it, you know, I know that there's a history of like Judaism in India. And I also just mentioned this, like, we don't, because this is not going to become the history podcast.
No,
but like,
please.
I'll say like something that I'm so thankful for is that my mom, long, beautiful story, but my mom actually taught like Jewish studies in a university for a long time, just because she was like so fascinated by the culture. So I'm sure she knows all this, but I don't because I'm not her. So like how did that happen that you were like, and in that you were Jewish and in India, and like, I guess I've questioned just because it sounds like there weren't a lot of people around you who also were Jewish going.
Yeah. It's like India has a population of a billion plus people. And I believe in Mumbai, there are technically two sects of Jews, like one's from Baghdad and then one, which is what I'm part of, called the Bene Israeli Jews. And we allegedly are like a lost tribe because we've been in India, you know, because it's Judaism in general is an oral tradition, but definitely for Jews of India, it's an oral tradition where we're not entirely sure. Like there was some shipwreck either from Spain, you know, something like that. I wonder if my grandma did a 23andMe, like, if we're able to find out, but probably not, because we've been in India, I think, since like 16th century, like some like ridiculous, like we're an old community, like it's not this like new thing that came up. But yeah, so Indian, like the Jews have been in India for a long, long time. And actually one of the only places in the world that anti-Semitism wasn't, you know, as prevalent, just because maybe people didn't know us, or everyone looks the same, right? It's a pretty homogenous country, in at least looks wise. Like you can tell if someone's from the south or north of India, like just unfortunately because of the color and because we were colonized, there's a lot of colorism and stuff like that. And I mean, like the amount of languages in India, it's like off the charts, but you know, everyone technically, right, like looks the same, and, or has, is like on a spectrum of brown.
Right.
So, so that's something like really interesting as well about Indian Jews. So there, Bene Israeli Jews, where I'm from, I think there were like 5,000 of us. So not that many. But we were a pretty close community, when I was, and even now, but especially when I was in India, I keep kosher even now, which if anyone knows like what halal is, it's kind of the same, idea, but my grandpa cut the kosher meat for the synagogue, and the synagogue was like 5 minutes away from where we lived. So being Jewish, I felt like was more accessible when I lived in India versus when actually obviously I'm in Oklahoma. And in the Bay Area, it is easier, right? It's just higher population and more Jews of color as well. But so in India, we have this community that, you know, is like frozen in time, where it's pretty traditional in some sense, and has like a lot of unique Indian rituals, like woven into like our rituals as well. Like we take our shoes off before we go into synagogue, which I think is very much a Indian Jewish thing, because Hindus like do that before they go into temple. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot of assimilated beautiful practices, but it's just like this community that like that's been there for I don't know how long. Just a long, long time.
Yeah, this is it's so interesting though to like even hear about your experiences with this, and I feel like my mind is like slowly like growing, like I actually feel it expanding as we talk about this.
You're so kind.
It's real, and that's the cool thing, like the ability to dive into these things and also just like the nuances of it, because for me when I hear Oklahoma I'm like I don't want to go, I'm not gonna go, you're not gonna find me there. Nowadays especially I'm like Texas, no, I don't know, not gonna give me some time.
I hear that.
Post-pandemic especially. But it's cool to kind of hear the positivity in those experiences too, because sometimes, like with any identity, right, I think sometimes we boil it down. We have a great habit of either like ignoring the identity and not learning about it, which is definitely something I realize happens a lot with Jews in the US. Mm-hmm. Or we like boil it down to trauma and it's like, you're a victim and everything sucks. And like, I pity you and I feel bad for you. And so like one thing I'm curious about even before kind of continuing more into your story and college and everything else is like, what were some of those beautiful moments of like being this, like, and again, the tweet that I remember seeing was like, Sasha's a Jew. I don't know how they phrase it, but it's like a Jewish Indian who lived in Oklahoma and now lives in the Bay Area.
I think exactly what you're talking about. Yes. It was an article about me.
Probably.
Because I had just, I had just moved to San Francisco, and they were like, a Jew of color. Oh my God. They were like, we gotta do, So it was a Jewish newspaper. Yes. The J Weekly in, in San Francisco. Yes. It was like a very kind article. I just, wish they talked a little bit about like my professional life too, not just my identity, but
who you are as a person.
We love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it's like from Mumbai by the way of Oklahoma.
Oh yeah, but that's probably something like that. I like literally
it was really funny.
Saw it before this. I was like, oh, okay, that's a way to really.
Yeah, it was 6 years ago because it was just when I had moved to San Francisco. Being Jewish has just like been part of my identity for as long as I can remember. Like Shabbat or the Sabbath is like my favorite thing ever. And for many reasons, I think it's just who doesn't like, a break, right, for the weekend. And Judaism like literally commands you to be like, you got a break on Friday night until Saturday night, mm-hmm. And it's just there's like these built-in rituals, I think, that I'm most fascinated by and that I'm like, yeah, this is why I feel like I'm Jewish. Not because necessarily like, oh, I love Torah, even though I do. I'm a nerd like that. But it's more that like I'm just so fascinated by how like the rituals just kind of hold me together sometimes. I think especially with these past 2 years, right, I have found a lot of just connection in ritual. And like ritual could be, reading a book, right? Like it doesn't need to be religious ritual. Just for me personally, Shabbat or the Sabbath is like what I find a lot of like exhaling, you know, in, yeah. And yeah, so that's why it's just Judaism has always been that for me. And being a person of color, right? And yeah, especially in Oklahoma, where a lot of, they don't look like me and my family. Yeah. So, you know, when you show up to synagogue and folks are just kind of like, are you lost? And I remember, being opting out of Jewish spaces because I was asked if I was adopted or if I was half Jewish. And it's like, which half? And, you know, or being like, oh, you know, like being asked to perform, right, for white people, especially in those spaces. So it's like, if anyone out there is listening, like, stop asking people, where are you really from? Like, that's weird. But and I'm happy, like, in this moment to share, because it's like that, you know, that's why I'm on this podcast. But, you know, when I'm like at services, like, I don't want to like share about my family necessarily. Yeah. So, yeah, it's like it's this like push and pull of like, no, I belong here, but also like, I don't want to deal with this. I'm going to do it at home moment. But that's why I feel like I'm in Jewish life now, because I don't know that there's a lot of representation for people of color, women of color, you know, in especially in like executive leadership spaces. So that's something like it was very important to me about Judaism, where I was like, well, I love Judaism and I know that it's great. And in India, it felt so accessible. So like, what can I do, you know, to bring that here? And that's what I'm excited that I get to do. And I get to like push people, because I have no shame when it comes to like marking my space and taking up space.
Oh, we love that. And, that's, and it, I think it's so interesting, like the role of, I always think the role of identity is fascinating, because for me in my work a lot, and I mean life, but in my work, I think about it so much. And I know that it's something that applies a lot to your work too. And so I guess something I wonder in thinking about identity is like, what is it that, because we'll come back to identity. We will obviously come back to it. We'll like talk more about that. But I'm almost curious, like, what is it when people kind of just see you as your identity without like all of the other amazing things that you are? Like, what is it that they're missing about you? And like, what is it typically that they distill you down to inaccurately?
Yeah, I think the biggest one, right, has to be like, are you, you know, supposed to be here? Like, that's the biggest thing. I think this might be true for a lot of women that are younger, but maybe in like mid-level management positions. Like at one of my older jobs, I remember being in a room where I was like, it was a fundraising intensive because, you know, I was like the top in my region. Like I was the director, so yeah. I needed to be there. And I remember like folks that are, you know, and not to like be annoying in that way, but folks that are like less, I don't know, not lesser than me, but like, yeah, right. Whatever.
Like lower. Yes. Thank you. Yes, like
rank
in the,
or whatever. The like, not that command, I'm in the military.
Whatever
but,
you call that. Yeah, exactly.
But you know, sometimes you have to pull rank, and that's just the truth. But I remember someone being like, oh, the new professionals is over there. And I was like, no, but I'm almost 30. Like, what? And I think especially for shorter women, like I'm 5'1", and I think I sound also pretty young, that it's harder for us to like take up that space. So it wasn't easy, you know, when I was first starting out. And I was grateful that I had a lot of mentors and allies that were able to create spaces for me. But yeah, I think when my identity, it's like, when folks see me, I think it's the outer is so interesting that folks are like wanting to know more. But, you know, now, right, you might not know that I like podcasts about reality TV. Like, you know, who, like, how I don't want to share that necessarily the first thing, but that's something you might not know about me. Or, yeah, that like I'm, you know, good at X, Y, and Z, whatever that may be for the in that moment that I would rather be talking about instead of maybe like being an Indian Jew, which it's who I am and I will always talk about it, but I don't want that to be the only, you know, like I'm not a, no human is one dimensional.
Exactly.
So how do you like accept all of, you know, people of color? Because I think we get so exoticized, for a lack of a better word.
Yeah. And it's a struggle. I think this is something, maybe it's not that much of a struggle. I think I just like overthink it because I also could totally relate to what you're saying and have been in that situation also as someone who like looks younger than they are. And thankfully I'm like more than 6 feet. So like, I don't get that, but like, they're like, oh, it's just like a tall baby who walked into the room. Like, oh, look at him. Oh my God. And so I think it's interesting to kind of talk about this balance between how our identities actually inform who we are and how we show up. Because like a lot of people, especially people who don't have underrepresented identities, like don't even think about how like, because those are a lot of ways our identities can be our superpowers, and they're what make us unique in spaces. And so I always struggle with that balance because I'm like, am I asking too much about this one identity, or am I just like digging deep on the thing that people, especially white people, but like, again, people from, you know, not from marginalized groups don't dig into, and like, they don't know how to ask these questions typically. Wow, this is deep. Like, I don't know if you've talked about this yet, but like, what's the work that you're doing now?
Yeah, I'm currently a project coordinator for Jewish Women of Color Resilience Circle. So it's basically a cohort for amazing women. You don't have to be Jewish. That's just what I think it was founded on. And now this year, actually, we're going to be centering Black women. And again, not Jewish, just Black women in general. Yeah. And really, you know, anti-Blackness in our communities, which I know, I'm sure, like, I want to make a note that if, you know, you aren't like a part of a minority group and you're listening to this podcast, you know, it's just, it's not necessarily to pile on. It's just, you know, like, because it might feel that way sometimes. And I understand that. But I think it's more that like the richness just finally is getting talked about on here, you know, so I also want to make that note. But yeah, that's the work I'm doing, where I'll be launching a cohort to, you know, center badass Black women and women of color and do a lot of like transformation. Like so I'm currently planning retreats and finding places, like finding private chefs and finding like abundance, you know, because that's something I think women of color, right, just maybe when we're, you know, are not always right accustomed to, like, we're not all poor. I just mean it doesn't always happen. So how do we, you know, as like transforming like social justice, but we first need to nourish ourselves. So that's currently the work I'm doing, is like figuring all that out.
Yeah. And maybe just to add like another dimension to what you even explained, like, I could, beyond everything that you said so brilliantly, this does not, well, I don't need to say it, but I think some people need to hear it, is just like there's also this thing where sometimes, at least like me speaking, like, for me and my identities, like, where you don't feel like you belong, or you don't feel like you're welcome, or like you don't think that X thing is for this type of person. Like, we've heard obviously it's total BS, but like, we've heard the phrase like, oh, that's not a thing that women do. Oh, that's not a thing that like this type of person does, that Indian people do, that Black people do, that like queer people do, whatever it might be. So I think it's really cool that you're creating those spaces where it really becomes not only safe, but encouraged to take that space, that take that space for yourself, when so often, like, it's I hear it so often, but it's just like, Black women are carrying so much weight of so many people. And then you also have to think about like Black trans women. We think about Black queer women, like all of these other intersecting identities, right? And so, damn, I'm glad that you're in the world doing the work that you're doing. Like, what, I mean, maybe this is something you've touched on, and it's obvious, but like, what motivates you to kind of show up in the world in that way? Because again, so many people know you as like hashtag messy queen, Sasha Joseph, all over the place, but like, what motivates you to spend your energy in the ways that you're doing, as you mentioned?
Yeah, I think I think about this a lot too. So I ended up quitting my job in July, like an old job. And I remember getting up, I think I was under a nap, like right after it. And then I remember like telling Rob, oh yeah, I'm currently unemployed. And Rob was like, you'll find a job so quickly. Like, this is a great time. Wow. So it's so funny because I was unemployed from July to November, actually, because I had to take a hard look at myself. And these past 2 years, I weirdly had a few, like two jobs, in these past 3-4 years, whatever the math is. But I finally decided that, you know, I have to be in systems that serve me, not the other way around. And this is true for anyone out there, right? Like, I don't just mean for people of color. I just mean like these and the, because of COVID, I think in these past 2 years, I have definitely felt the calling, you know, of like doing purposeful work for my people. And for, you know, and I've been thinking a lot about women of color and Jewish women of color. And, you know, if I'm going to be working overtime, I'm going to, you know, overtime, quote unquote, and I'm going to be, you know, working weekends, like I want to be in service of my people. Like, that was my biggest thing. So I realized that my job at that moment was beautiful and fulfilling in a lot of ways, but not what I wanted to be doing for, you know, my future. Because I was volunteering a lot with, like, with women of color voting and, you know, all of these kinds of things before this job. So I was like, oh, this is what brings me, you know, joy. And I sit on a few boards and racial justice task force. So I was like, oh, this is like, you know, like Marie Kondo, right? Like, does this spark joy?
Yeah.
But that's what I had to do, a hard look at myself and say, okay, I think that's what I want to do. So this sounds wild. I don't even think I've told Rob this, but I quit my job. And then the next day, Rob offered me, Rob and Scott offered me Love and Hip Hop. So I was like, is this like Kismet? You know, like what? And oh, not even that it was from, like, it's not like I can make a living off of Love and Hip Hop, but it was more that I think the universe was like, oh, like you'll be fine eventually. Like, we will figure something out. And I want to note my privilege in it, right? Like, my husband could support me financially in that moment, living in the damn Bay Area. So it's something that we were able to do financially also. But, you know, I just want to say to people, like, don't be in systems that don't support you, like professionally, personally, like work ain't going to love you back. There's no way, you know, and what does that mean for you? You know, so that's like how I ended up like in this current space, because I just knew that I wanted to be like serving a purpose. And my boss is just so just perfect, honestly. But she introduced me to a mentor, and she talked about my podcast. She was like, Sasha's doing such great work in the world. And she was like, here's her Love and Hip Hop podcast. Here's her Never Have I Ever podcast. And I was like, oh my God.
Here's her live feed update. Yeah. Here's her. Like,
so, you know, but it's like, how grateful am I that I'm in a space that's able to, like, you know, like fulfill me completely and that's able to see all of me. And that was what was important to me. So I was like turning down job applications left and right, because I was like, no, I want to be making a certain amount of money. It's time. I have a freaking master's degree. Like, I've supervised 5 people at once. Like, you know, I have all of this. So like, it's time. How do I make this happen? So that's how it was. Just, it was wild, but it was really important for me to do that, for myself, because, I don't know that I could, you know, tell someone else, like, give someone else advice or mentor someone when I am not, you know, happy myself. So yeah, that's how I ended up here in this work.
Wow. And the thing I love about this is that, I mean, obviously this is not live, it's recorded. So like, it'll be a while. This will have to come out for us to hear the feedback from people, but I already know that, like, that story of making this bold leap of like quitting your job and really following how you feel and following how you want to be treated and how you deserve to be treated is something that will like resonate with a lot of people, just because I know that that's one of the themes that I've heard feedback from different people, like people who don't know what path they want to be on, people mm-hmm. who feel unhappy with where they are. And it's really easy to say like, oh, just do what you love, like do the thing that you love, like figure out how to do that. But it's also a lot harder for people to sometimes get there. And, you know, one thing I'll just say too quickly without like going into my whole story with this, because like,
I know what's your podcast coming
out. Like, yeah, I know. Right. But I'll mention like, I switched jobs in the middle of the pandemic in like, you know, class of 2020, that's like June, July, mm-hmm. BB22 was there. And I'd been at like my job for like 4.5 years at that point. And it was a really cool job. And like the main thing I did, which I actually mentioned on RHAP a few times, because like there was a little bit of overlap while I was still in that job, was that I was working with NASA on like this program. And
rocket science.
It was like a community management, like storytelling type of like
that program. So
like
cool.
Soft. And it was about wow. people. And I got to like mm-hmm. really meet like a really diverse range of people and share their stories. But like the thing for me that was where I relate to you is George Floyd. I feel like so many episodes of this right? podcast, I mentioned George Floyd.
Oh my God.
Because like the timing of it. Yeah. Yes. And but also like the timing of it and class of 2020 is like not even coincidental. It's like very much interlinked. And I think it comes up and he comes up and that horrible story comes up. But like with that, you know, that kind of stuff, a chain of events, which included me leaving my job, because, you know, I remember really advocating for, I've never talked about this anywhere, but like advocating for NASA to be like Black Lives Matter and mm-hmm. to share that they stand for those things. And like, spoiler alert for people who love NASA, they don't, they didn't do mm-hmm. that. They wouldn't do that. And so I said, like, I can't be in a place that won't protect me and my identities yep. and like support me. And like, thankfully my current job also came up at that time. Right. And so, you know, that's like a piece of privilege of like, ooh, an opportunity came up where I was able to shift when I like, and needed it spiritually, emotionally, all of it. But like, I'm kind of curious from you, like, what were some of the, I'm not even like curious to know like the hesitations as much, because I think a lot of people could understand the hesitations with like quitting your job. But like, what were some of the positive things that you were like reaching toward in doing that? Because again, most people don't think that they can do that. Thankfully, a lot more people realize that they can quit their jobs.
Period. Great resignation, baby.
Exactly. And like, what's the, but yes. what was like the, what were you, or maybe it's not even a question like what you were reaching toward, because I am curious like how you wanted to be treated in that way. It's always cool to hear that. But like, is there advice you would have for people who are struggling with this idea of like, I'm unhappy, but I also feel stuck?
Yeah, I think first is you really have to have a board of directors, is how I like to call it, right? Like every organization has a board, not every, sorry, but a good amount of organizations have a board of directors.
Right.
Who are your personal board of directors, right? Like who is your chair and your co-chair, right? That can really, like for me, I think it's my mom and my husband, of course, who are, you know, going to keep it real. Like my mom will drag if I need to be dragged, but also, you know, we'll be like, you'll be fine. Just do what you need to do. But, you know, like who are your board of directors that like, when will hype you up? You know, like I think each person needs to serve a different purpose, much like a board. And, you know, that's my number one thing is like, you have to have a support system. And I don't mean a partner, because I think like if one person is your everything, you in trouble, baby.
Right. No. Your partner is not your therapist is like a very important thing for people to learn exactly. and remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I did a lot of networking, which I hate to do. Like you just follow me on LinkedIn today. Like I have like, yep. I think 200 something connections. So like I've always
201,
had a job.
Baby.
Yeah. Cause I've always had a job before I left my other job. Yeah. So I've never needed to do any of this stuff before. So, you know, I was like, how the hell am I going to network without, you know, pissing people off or without like, you know, really talking bad about my job, but like sharing the realities of what me as a person of color, you know, being the only in a lot of these spaces are expecting. So I like really was able to network with a lot of amazing, like I had a list in mind, like I want to meet someone that just quit a job and got a new one. I want to meet someone, you know, talk to someone that, you know, is like super optimistic about life because like I wasn't feeling that. Right. And then I was like, and I need to meet like a badass Jewish woman of color because that's what I want to be. So how do I get, you know, get there? And so I like had almost like a list of things I needed to do, and type of job. And I decided that I need to be paid a certain amount. Yeah. That was another thing, that was very important to me. But I don't, like for you, right? Everyone has an, like a non-negotiable. For me, it was, money, and take a hard look at what you've been doing. What do you hate about it? Don't apply for another job if it's going to be the same. Because I remember when folks were like, oh, do you not know what you want? And I was like, no, I absolutely know what I want. I was like, I don't want to be like quote unquote customer facing anymore. I'm tired of being on the ground. Like I've done that since I was 25. Yeah. And it's mentally exhausting to build relationships. Like I was an engagement associate, like that was literally my job, was to build connections with college students. Yeah. So I was like, girl, it's, I've done, I don't want to anymore. Right. So what are your like non-negotiables? And I think then I started looking at jobs and being okay with like a little bit of uncertainty. Doesn't mean you should, you know, do what's best for you professionally, like financially. And you know, if you can afford, a coach, that's another thing that really helped me. I am grateful that I was just happened to be in a professional development cohort that that gives me a free coach. So I was able to reach for them. But, you know, again, like figure out what is it that you are not happy about first. And then like almost write, you know, like I literally had a document of like my dream job and I would pick random like job descriptions and like copy paste in there. Nice. Like, I like this paragraph from this job, this paragraph from this job. And then do that. I think I only interviewed one and I definitely didn't get that job. But that person, I don't think knew who I was or like what I was about. So I'm grateful. It's fine. Cause I'm in much better space. But this job, I like in, this was my second interview only. So I was very picky. And I know everyone thought I was crazy because I applied to a lot of tech jobs because I was like, let's try tech. We're in the Bay Area. But I knew my heart wasn't in it. I was like, like, I hope I don't get that job. So, yeah, I don't know. That's my like advice, I guess.
And I think it's great advice because you're saying that it's important to do two things. One of them is to, like, as you said, very clearly, like, to look at the ways that you don't want to be treated, the things that you don't want in a job. But the other that you pointed to, even with job descriptions and lines you liked, is how do I want to be treated? Yeah. And it's a habit that I'm like just learning because now I feel like, well, I'll say like now I have the privilege through my job to have like professional development where I have a coach who will ask like, how do you want to feel? And I'm like, well, I don't want to feel, and then I catch myself. I'm like, oh, I have spent so much time, like a lot of people, thinking about what I don't want, right? Instead of what you do. And, you know, some people believe in like the law of attraction, like you kind of attract the things you spend time thinking about. And so it's, I think it's really important to do that. But something else I would say to add to what you were saying is that some people might listen and say, well, I don't have professional development through my job and I don't have anyone who supports me in my job, or like maybe they don't have some of the resources or privileges that you pointed to. But the cool thing is, especially with the internet, like you could reach out to people and informally build connections, and like you could have a podcast like this where you just like interview people about their lives and like talk with them and get their advice and their wisdom. So there's always a way to do it if you want it badly enough, which I think is like kind of the thing. And like jobs, that's complicated and difficult, but I'm glad that you could kind of explain some of the thought process there with how you've approached things. But you know, there's like, I feel like there are a million things I could ask you about, Sasha. I'm going to ask you this question, which is a horrible question, but I already know you've got this. So if you were me and I was you, what would you ask yourself right now?
Oh my God. I wonder
This occurred to me like in the shower this morning, and I was like, let me try this one out.
Yeah, I don't. I think, yeah, a little bit maybe about the class of 2020 journey. Is that like a fun thing to talk about? Do people care? I don't know.
I think people care. And I do think it ties in a little bit with what you're saying.
Yeah.
About, well, how you want to be treated, but also you've mentioned it, like your boss being aware of the class of 2020 or of the podcast. And something else that's on my mind that maybe ties in a little bit with your podcasting journey is like you did a podcast last year, I know, that was focused on Asian representation, which like I have to thank you for, because as much as I think about like Black representation and being a Black person, like to see that podcast in my feed was what actually gave me permission to do Black Voices of RHAP. Cause I was like, oh, this is a thing we could talk about now and do and create. But like, yeah, like what was it like for you? Oh, wait, you know what? I'm geeking out a little bit because I love to hear like what people's I don't know what we called it, like audition or interview.
Oh my god, same. Experience. I love.
So, like,
to
what
hear
was
it.
Your what was your interview experience? Who was there? What did you talk about? Let's just start there because we're gonna go into.
Oh my god. Okay.
Do you remember?
So yes, I very. Like, this is where I was sitting for it. I applied. So my friend Jason Orch, who is an RHAP patron who introduced me to the world of RHAP back, I don't know, when I was in college, 2011, maybe 2010.
Wow.
I don't know. Was like, oh, you listen to you like The Amazing Race. You should listen. So that was my way into RHAP. I only listened to Amazing Race coverage for a long time. And I could be wrong on the year, so don't come for me. Anyway, so that was like my in, but I never followed anyone because I was like, all these people like post spoilers and like, I want to watch my shows. So I'm not going to, follow anyone. So yeah. I didn't know about this class of 2020 thing happening. Because I think again, I was very like, I listened to Ali and Brian on the Challenge podcast, like, and you know, and then the Big Brother stuff. Yeah. Right. But then my friend Jason shared, you know, like, you should do this. And I was like, what do I have to share? You know, I'm just like a random. And he was like, well, like, did you forget your story? And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess that's cool. So I remember that it was June 26th, which I think was the last day of auditions, which is also my wow. birthday. So I was like, girl, you gotta send it in.
When the tape was due. What time do you know what time you submitted it?
Because
I mentioned to
yeah,
Mari, it was
I had like, that's why I was laughing. That's why I was like, no, it was June 26th. It was my birthday.
Yeah, I have that habit sometimes. It was like a very much like, should I do it? What do I have to share with them? Would they want me? And
exactly.
Then I just did it, which is obviously we're here now.
Yeah, but, look like, at us.
you decided to actually do it, yeah. And you applied, mm-hmm. And then you had your little
interview.
So what show did you talk about, and like, so were there a million people there?
So they told me I needed to prep my own show. Yeah, so everyone else is always talking about like, oh, here's the show I wanted to talk about, right? Like Big Brother or whatever.
Yeah.
I was asked like present, like, unless I read it wrong. Sorry, Sam. but it was like, I think Sam said, like the email said, like present, like prepare a show for us to talk about. So obviously Love and Hip Hop was my show. So I was like, oh, this is the most one I'm most passionate about. Let me talk about it. Right. I open the Zoom. And then I did not think Rob would be on the Zoom. Okay. Same. I want to say that because I was like, oh, I think that would be round two or three or final round of interviews. Right. I'm like, I'm assuming. Nope. It was Rob. It was Jessica Leese. It was Mike Bloom and Josh Wiggler were on my screen. And I was like, are you what? How dare this happen to me? So I'm stressed. I was like, this is flop. Like, I don't know how I'm going to do. I did not end up talking about anything except my background. Wow. Mike Bloom kept asking me questions about like, oh, like, is that your wedding picture? Like, what is this? What's that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I never, and you know, it was 10 minutes And I remember all Rob asked me was, what's your connection to reality TV? And like, what shows do you watch? Thank God I said 90 Day Fiance.
Right.
Yeah, because Puya said that's what he heard. And that's why he ended up asking me to be on. But yeah, I didn't talk about any reality TV. I only talked about myself. So I was like, I always do this. I only talk about myself. And I never get like the conversation that I need across. This is so bad. So I assumed they would never call me back because I was like, this is ratchet. Like, what did I just do? And then I was one of the later ones where everyone else, right, got asked to do Big Brother, I think. But again, because I didn't talk about the shows I like that much. I think they were just maybe nice enough to let me on. But I was, yeah, and that's how I randomly got a call. I remember asking Sam, like, so when I go on the podcast, am I part of the class of 2020? Like, what?
Wait, when was your first podcast?
So my first podcast was the original Slop with Jenny Autumn. So I did like a little game with Rob and Jenny and Ryan.
Ryan Popola. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that guy.
Yeah.
He's a wrestling guy. So I'm a big fan of Ryan Popola.
Exactly. That's why I wanted to. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's how, it was like a little segment that Sam, I think, had asked us, right? Like to come up with the cast bio game. So that was my first ever podcast. And I remember like messing up a little, but I was like, I think Rob laughed with me. I think Jenny laughed with me. I think we're good. And then that's how I kept getting called back for podcasts only. And I think I only did podcasts with Rob for a good amount of time. Like I was only on the live show with Rob.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then Puya asked me to be on 90 Day Fiance. I think that was my first like real guest podcast.
And I didn't even watch 90 Day. I mean, I still don't really watch 90 Day Fiance, but I remember listening around that time too. And specifically, I still remember hearing you on because I remember you talking like, actually Puya also has done this a lot with 90 Day Fiance, but just giving the perspective as someone who's like not from the US and like all these other dynamics within that. So you made it. You glue up. You glowed up.
Glowed up. Like I like glowed up better. It's not grammatically correct, but don't.
You glowed up. You glowed up, and it was amazing. I will just mention to you as we're here, like I had everyone that you mentioned on my interview. I also had like five other people there. So
what the hell?
I don't want to. It's a whole thing. I don't know. It was great. And there's a recording of it. That's the thing. All of them were recorded.
Hope they never, ever.
I hope they
them.
Do.
No, if absolutely
Sam Moore
not.
And Scott St. Pierre and Rob Sesternino are listening. Release the tapes. Release
do
the tapes.
Not really?
Release like the super cut, like of the best of those.
Let me not ever make it. I do remember Mike Bloom like asking me about representation and like stuff like that. So I think that's the only like serious conversation I think I had. But they were probably like, oh, she can switch pretty quickly. Like, you know, from like being like funny and ratchet to like when they were like, so can you talk? Because I remember talking about the challenge and all the like, and the whole D situation had just happened. So that's what I ended up talking about. I was like, well, as an Asian woman, we barely get any representation. But all, you know, all goes to Kevin, who came up with the idea. I just asked me to be on that podcast. But yeah, I just think that Asians especially, we like get forgotten. I don't know if that's the right word. Because sometimes with the CBS, you know, 50% rule, first of all, 50% is stupid. What does that even mean?
Right. They just picked in. They're like, oh, we like this number. It's half of 100. Let's do that.
Right. And, you know, from that, I feel like it becomes very binary, like literally black and white. And then a lot of other identities get lost. And it does. This doesn't equal stop having black people on. Like, that's not what I'm saying. Don't come for me. All I'm saying is, like, I just wish, right? Like, we had more Rohans and had more Hannah Chuddas, right? Like, Karishma, right? Like, Ovi, like, all these amazing South Asian. I'm only talking about South Asians because that's what I can remember right now. But, right, like, I'm just Derek X. You know, it's like, why are there only one of us, you know, on these shows? And the Asian the Asian continent is so huge that even if you have two Asians, we don't have the same like connection exactly. at all. Yeah. So I probably, you know, because all my friends, most of my friends in high school were Black, I might connect way more with the Black people mm-hmm. on the show than I would maybe the other Asian on the show. So that's just something like I want, you know, production to understand. It's like, when we say we want more representation, right? Like, I don't just mean like one, you know, Asian on the show. Like, it's so hard for that person, as we've seen over and over again. Like, if they don't win vetoes, mm-hmm. You know, they're kind of screwed. So that's just something, you know, like I'm both anding it. Like,
yeah.
We need more Black people on the show, period. And we need more, you know, people of color on the show, period.
Yeah, and I think people will get that from you. And I laughed like hearing what you're saying about like, no, I'm not saying there needs to be less Black people, because if anyone hears that from Sasha or wants to at Sasha, at me too.
And listen, we'll probably both block after Survivor Thailand, we know the trolls and I.
Gosh.
Wait, I'm not the one. Let me
hopefully
just tell you.
Hopefully they've been, have the people been mostly good to you?
Yeah, that's okay, another thing. I don't ever, again, because I don't think I'm popular enough. So like that. So I'm grateful because like I think because I get on a same. Few podcasts here and there. No, you please. You're popular.
Well, no, it's like it's literally like one day there's a point that you get to where that you're just going to get hate, you know?
Yeah.
Just because you have so many people who are watching and who feel like they could say something about you. The beauty of like, I'm so fascinated to like hear about your experience with not with the trolls. Like I've mm-hmm. I've interviewed people and spent a lot of time talking about trolls and yeah. like that. But like, it's good to hear how people are good to you. So you're saying like you don't feel like you've been super exposed on the podcast, so you haven't gotten that. But like the people have been good to you. Is, yeah. is where I started.
Yeah, I mean, like obviously I get a few trolls and I'm annoying, yeah. so I. like sometimes respond, which is horrible, but like I will drag. I don't care.
You deserve to, just like your mom drags you.
Exactly. Exactly. Like I was born this way. Right.
Yeah.
So I have no problem dragging people, especially if I think I'm right. Oh, it's really bad for you. Like I yeah. got the time. Yeah. So yeah, that's why like Shannon Gus has been one person that's really like, I'm grateful. She like sometimes will message me, you know, and like just give me tips on how to deal with, you know, trolls or, you know, if you're on a podcast and like you don't end up talking that much, you know, whatever. Like she has been so kind. She'll always reach out to me. And then Puya and Kirsten have been really great with like how to navigate that stuff. And of course, Rob too. One time Rob texted me and was like, I saw this tweet about like, you're fine. Don't even worry. And I was like, Rob, please. So, you know, I'm grateful that one, I think if I have trolls, that mean I've made it. So I don't think I've made it yet. You know,
you made it a long time ago.
Because people are nice to me still.
You made it a long time ago, even beyond RHAP. You're a big deal. God. You're famous. You were on reality TV.
Oh, God.
You're one of the originals in reality TV. You're one of the trailblazers.
In the early 2000s. When was I in the sixth grade? Whatever that was. Whatever
you changed the game. Like, honestly, you should have a Wikipedia page by now based on just that alone. But you've done so much more. But actually, like, following up on what you were saying, you mentioned Asian representation and Kevin McLean, who you did the podcast with. And, you know, Kevin's someone who I've talked with a lot about this and like a lot of topics, and he was in DC. So like we've hung out and everything. And, you know, I'm kind of curious about like your thoughts on this idea of, you know, maybe this is like a good thing for us to kind of, as we get toward the end, like your thoughts on when you show up and like educate, and your thoughts on when you step back and like protect your peace and say like, these people need to put in the effort. And like, I'm curious how you balance those two things, because like sometimes we really feel like we have like this role to play to speak up and to say something and to educate. And other times it's like, this is not worth my time and energy. And so I'm like curious, how do you balance those things? It's not only in podcasting, but also just in your work, because you could probably spend like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week educating people if you wanted to. But like, yeah, what's that balance?
Great question. I think that the biggest thing for me is just, I think Mari also said this, right? Like, we know who's on the other side. Like, are they listening to us? And I really echo that sentiment because I have a master's in human relations, which is literally how humans interact with each other. So something about myself, I'm pretty judgy human being. Like, anyone that's close to me will know that, like, I'm quick to judge people, but I'm like the vibes, like I'm a Cancer. I don't know if it comes from that, but like, I'm pretty like on point with how I feel about people. Like, I've noticed that if I'm like, hey, Matt has like a really great vibe, I know I'm gonna like rock with him. Or like if blank person and I just won't get along. And then later on, it's, you know, like people will come to me like months later, even being like, oh my God, Sasha, like I actually, yeah, don't like this person. So I don't know. I've always had that kind of innate ability, I think, to like see through the BS, right? Like who's genuine, who isn't. So I've realized that in just life, I think, and when I'm on a podcast, right? Like I'm usually on the Big Brother and 90 Day Fiance one. So in those moments, I do feel like I need to educate a little bit, right? Where I do need to, I think, say my piece is how I feel. So yeah. If something happens, I always write it down. Like I'll always write down like what I feel like I need to, like the points I need to cover about Asians or, you know, whatever about like if I'm the only person of color on the panel, right? Like whatever, I'll like write two or three points. And then I don't like to go super deep into that because I don't want to be fighting with the chat or fighting with trolls. Like that's not the reason, but because, you know, I've studied this, I have a degree in like literally social justice and psychology, right? All into one, where I know like, here's, you know, things I need to like point out, but then I also need to move on because like you're not paying me to do this, right? Like if you pay me, I will educate you, you know, like put me on your roster, I don't care. But you know, that's how I protect my peace, is like, am I getting paid? You know, to like constantly go back and forth in education. Like I think it's okay to like educate someone when it's like a 1-2, right? Like, oh, here's like a few points, here are a few articles, live your best life, as opposed to when someone is like really coming at you with their like stupidity, where I was like, you're not paying me for this, why am I arguing? Like, no, goodbye. So that's how I think I see it, where I have like a threshold of like this and your sincerity, I think, because I've been in situations where some white people genuinely like had just like no idea and like truly came from like a good place, did not say the right things, it doesn't matter, but like meant it in a good way. So like I'm happy to then like smile and educate them, but I'll always end with like, but don't ask someone else that, or like here, or I'll always be like, you didn't do this, wink. But I hate when people ask me how I speak English so well, even though they kind of low-key did. So that's how I've like just through mentorship, through, you know, a lot of work, like figured out how to like call people out and call people in as necessary.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And it's like a good balance, and you have to kind of know when to put your energy there and know when it's like, okay, I'm not on the clock right now. And it could be a full-time job to educate people about many things. And so it's good to hear that. You know, before I get to, you know, let me just go to the question. And, you know, if you need a second to think about it, you could take that second. But, you know, one question that I've asked every interviewee at the end of these interviews is, if your life were a book or documentary, what would the title be and why? And you know what? You're ready. You look like you're ready. You look like you have this figured out. You're like, good. I have my bullet points listed out. I have my title. I wrote up the book cover, everything.
Listen, one thing is I will never show up unprepared if I know that it's like a reoccurring thing. So I definitely thought about it. I'll say that because I was like, I don't want to get caught looking dumb. That's like my worst fear. I hate being embarrassed. Like I hate it.
I will always like cover up for people. Even if I could have gone on a rant for a minute just to give you time to think about it. But
exactly.
Clearly you've thought about this.
Yeah. I was like, oh, maybe something will come up while we're podcasting, but like, I don't know. So yeah, I think mine would be just like Sasha Joseph living a life full size. Cause I always joke that I'm fun size. So yeah.
Okay, well, let me ask you a follow-up question to catch you off guard. if it were, let's assume it's a book. Mm-hmm. Like, would Sasha Joseph living life full size, who would write like the foreword of the book?
Oh, my God.
Life?
Oh, bam. I think my mom would write it. Just because we that's my ride or die. We've been through so much. Yeah. Or a man, you know, like, or someone that I really respect, like, professionally. Yeah, it would have to be my mom or like someone I respect professionally, like my current boss who like seen me through a few years now. So yeah, I think someone that like understands that like I'm funny and I want you to like cover that. And mm-hmm. also, you know, like talk about my accomplishments too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's awesome. It's been awesome talking with you. We could probably be, we could just be here for,
I know.
We could be here forever. We could keep going, but I want to give you the opportunity kind of as we close out. Is there anyone that you want to, I'm going to keep this open-ended. Is there anyone that you want to either drag or the opposite of drag as we close this out? There's just like, is there anyone you want to drag or what's the opposite of drag? Like celebrate?
Yeah, uplift, lift up.
Elevate, all of those. Yeah. I think you said a great like drag or some other word that sounded good earlier, but I have no idea.
So, maybe that should be my
drag or no drag. It's like deal or no deal.
Or like, or like Sasha Joseph, I love mess. No, I'm just kidding.
That's the backup. That's your second book, maybe.
Yeah. That's because if the first one sells a lot, then we'll do.
Oh my God. But yeah, I just want to give you the space to actually more broadly, like not even about dragging. I mean, you could drag whoever or elevate who or lift up whoever. But more broadly, I just want to give you the space to like share any advice or words with whoever's listening kind of as we start to wrap up. I just thought of that one myself.
Yeah, totally. when I want to say thank you first, you know, and you are the first person I think I would like to lift up because Mike Bloom, I think specifically talks a lot about you in that way where you're just such a good interviewer and how, you know, good you are at creating this sacred space. But I also just want to lift up right secondly, like Rob. And you know, again, like I know you and Mari also said this, like we don't want to constantly sit here and do this, but like I really do feel so grateful because I had zero practice on podcasting, right? Like I just kind of showed up to be myself and Rob and I say Rob, but I mean like Rob as the entity also, because there's multiple people that we don't see, that are also doing the work. So, you know, I'm so grateful for that, you know, and for them to create the space for us, because I know there's so much like frustration and so much like flack they get for us, right? And like us bringing our full selves to this space, but here we are still. Suck it. No, I'm just kidding. but you know, I'm so grateful for this sacred space. And third, I think the people, right, that we have met through this journey, I think it's different people for different ones. And I don't want to name everyone because I know I'll forget someone and that'll be horrible and disrespectful. But, you know, I just want to say like for people from class of 2020 that I talked to, and you know, the quote unquote, they're not older age wise. I just mean like the people that have been doing this, for a long time. Like, I just want to say how, you know, I want to lift them up because they didn't need to share the space with us. They don't need to share, you know, anything with us, but the fact that, you know, they're so willing to like open arms and really like allow us to be us and, you know, authentically us where, and not feel so stressful. Like, I know that when I'm irritated about certain things, like I can reach for certain people, because people in my real life aren't going to understand, right? Like, mm-hmm. what it is to get a troll or this like reality TV drama. So again, I'm grateful for that. And those podcasters, like, you know who you are, for being that space and being this like sacred community. And lastly, for the listeners, because like what a chance they're taking. Like, you don't need to listen to me. Like, there's app, you know, I owe you nothing. You owe me nothing. But you take a chance and you believe in the product so much. And I don't know that they're shouted out in this way in a lot of times where I think we're like, oh, we have the best listeners. They create great community. But I also just want to say, like, the resilience of this community and, you know, just, and I know music, like, and just the joy that they are able to bring to all of this and to all of us so that we can keep doing this. And the like, I think that's like what I want to lift up in these spaces, because it does get deep. It does get messy. It does get confusing and hard. And a lot of times where a lot of people are like, well, I just didn't know about blank thing. I didn't know this thing existed. So, you know, shout out to you who are willing to learn because of us and who are willing to like be an ally so that we, especially the people of color, don't have to do the work. And I there's so many, like I want to name white listeners that are, that call, you know, call in or call out like dirt that happens to us. So I, you know, I want to name that too. Like, I don't always want to, you know, talk about the haters. Cause I want to lift up like the allies that are, out here doing the work. Even if you have like 10 followers and you don't think we see, you're defending us like we do. So yeah, that's just what I want to lift up.
Wow. I love, well, one, like plus one, plus one, plus one, plus one to all of that. Seriously. And you know, the, maybe the, there's, I like, I, and I get what you, and I, first of all, I just think it's ironic that we started talking out with mess and you have like the cleanest, cleanest, like, exit to the podcast. Like,
wait,
I'm not
really
gonna name names. I'm not gonna name names because I'm not saying in comparison to anyone else. I'm just saying in general, like the fact that you're just like, I'm not gonna name names, but I appreciate all these people. And you thanked everybody. big thanks. Like, obviously, I think it's important that we give that thanks. Like, to, in all seriousness, like, I'm sure Rob, I know Rob appreciates it too. And I don't think anyone could hear it enough how important they are, but the listeners especially stand out to me. Well, actually everyone stands out to me, but
no, like, but I know what you mean.
Anyone who's listening right now, I mean, especially stands out to me. So podcasters, Rob, whoever it might be, listeners who just listen, because like, you don't need to be this far into this podcast hearing our voices. And so I legitimately, like, I might not know you, but like, I have so much love for you, for the people who are listening. And you said it better than I possibly could. So something that I've been asking people, you know, like here and there, do you have like a sign off for this podcast?
You know, I really should have practiced that one. That was the one thing I didn't practice. Actually, I didn't practice a thing before either. So thank God. Okay, something good came to me. But yeah, maybe the sign off could be, you know, thank you. I say this on Love and Hip Hop, but I think it worked here too. I'm cheating. I don't care. Fight me. But yeah, I think it's, you know, thank you so much for being here with my friends. Make sure you share with your friends so we can switch and be friends.
Well, damn. Bye, Pop.
I say this on Love and Hip Hop. So I, you know, it's the rap lyrics. I know. I did not come up with it.
Oh.
I think it's a Biggie song, right?
I'm going to do the Mari. Bye, Pod Friends. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to this week's episode of Pod Friends. And thank you so much, Sasha, for being part of it and sharing your story, sharing your journey, for not being afraid to take up space and to have your voice be heard, but in the process, creating space for other people. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for the learning I've had from you. I'm thankful that people are hearing the sound of my voice now, which means that they listened. And I would encourage anyone who really loved this episode, again, to leave a review, leave those 5 stars, and subscribe to the podcast. But also let us know on social media at Matt Scott GW, at Hey Pod Friends. Let Sasha know what you think at funsize_04. Like, get in touch. Let us know what resonates. Let us know how your story connects with with Sasha's. And keep an eye out because the season finale of Pod Friends featuring the one and only Wendell Holland is coming up next week. Special thanks to the RHAP team, to Scott St. Pierre, Rob Sesternino, Sam Moore, to Hannah Lidsky, Tricky Rice, Chelsea Lesser, and just their entire team, everyone behind the scenes. Thank you so much for making this possible. But, you know, until next time, thanks for being a pod friend.